It's my pleasure to welcome Robin Blazer back to the campus of San Francisco State College. And in a sense, he really doesn't need an introduction, or at least in an unusual sense, because this is his home. He's teaching now in British Columbia. But this is still home. He has friends here. Many of you already know him. And an introduction is also unnecessary for another reason. There is his own imperative. Always resist, he has said, the temptation to make biography important. Mr. Blazer is going to read the work of his longtime friend, Jack Spicer. We've also prevailed on him to read some things of his own. His own work is calmly but intensely personal. It does not, I think, make a cult of personality. It has a kind of outward severity and precision and a mysterious or subtle suggestiveness of image and movement. It conjures a strange world into being. As he says in one poem, even in the night there are birds summoned by words. Robin Blazer's work includes the Moth poem, which was published in 1964 by Open Space, and a recent collection of translations of the French poet Nerval. He has appeared in Locus Solus, in The Nation, and in two important anthologies, Don Allen's New American Poetry, 1945 to 1960, and more recently in the anthology called A Controversy of Poets. With great pleasure, I give you Robin Blazer.
When I was here, I was in the library because I didn't like to teach, and now I'm having a lousy time teaching because it takes me in. Well, it's kind of odd to wind up having to do with Ezra Pound, as if Ezra Pound didn't write those things in 1915. So in 1967, I've been spending most of my time in 1915, 1920. I want to make a combination of my work and Jack's. I'm very willing to talk about Jack Spicer with anybody that wishes, but in the limit of time, it didn't seem quite the thing to give a lecture on Jack's work or to spend all the time talking about it when Jack would really prefer that the poetry be the thing you face up to. Jack died a year ago last August, and we will be bringing out more of the work that has not been published. Today I'm going to read from his textbook of poetry, which is a section of the book called Heads of the Town Up to the Ether. But I wanted to open up with a letter about poetry that Jack includes in a beautiful book called After Lorca. Book After Lorca is a sequence of poems. Actually, the whole thing is one form. Part of it is translation, part of it is Jack, part of it is made up of letters which the dead Lorca wrote to Jack and are to be taken quite literally as letters from the dead Lorca. And you can't tell where the one starts and the other begins. And this says an awful lot about one's relationship to poetry, since so much of what we read is a poetry out there that has been done, and one has to come to meet it. The letter from Lorca to Jack. Dear Lorca, I would like to make poems out of real objects. The lemon to be a lemon that the reader could cut or squeeze or taste. A real lemon like a newspaper in a collage in a real newspaper. I would like the moon in my poems to be a real moon, one which could be suddenly covered with a cloud that has nothing to do with the poem, a moon utterly independent of images. The imagination pictures the real. I would like to point to the real, disclose it, to make a poem that has no sound in it but the pointing of a finger. We have both tried to be independent of images, you from the start and I only when I grew old enough to tire of trying to make things connect, to make things visible rather than to make pictures of them, fantasia, not imaginare. How easy it is in erotic musings or in the truer imagination of a dream to invent a beautiful boy. How difficult of a dream to invent a beautiful boy. How difficult to take a boy in a blue bathing suit that I have watched as casually as a tree and to make him visible in a poem as a tree is visible. Not as an image or a picture, but as something alive, caught forever in the structure of words. Live moons, live lemons, live boys in bathing suits. The poem is a collage of the real. But things decay, reason argues. Real things become garbage. The piece of lemon you shellac to the canvas begins to develop a mold. The newspaper tells of incredibly ancient events in forgotten slang. The boy becomes a grandfather. Yes, but the garbage of the real still reaches out into the current world, making its objects in turn visible. Lemon calls to lemon, newspaper to newspaper, boy to boy. As things decay, they bring their equivalents into being. Things do not connect, they correspond. That is what makes it possible for a poet to translate real objects, to bring them across language as easily as he can bring them across time. That tree you saw in Spain is a tree I could never have seen in California. That lemon has a different smell and a different taste. But the answer is this: every place and every time has a real object to correspond with your real object. That lemon may become this lemon, or it may even become this piece of seaweed, or this particular color of gray in this ocean. One does not need to imagine that lemon, one needs to discover it. Even these letters, they correspond with something, I don't know what, that you have written, perhaps as unapparently as that lemon corresponds to this piece of seaweed. And in turn, some future poet will write something which corresponds to them. That is how we dead men write to each other, love, Jack. Let me apologize. I revised a bit and said that I was reading a letter from Lorca to Jack and read you a letter from Jack to Lorca, but it was perfectly clear, I think. Now, I want to, I'm going to mix some of mine of which some are translations with some of Jack's. So I'll first read a translation from Victor Hugo of a poem called Orpheus, which is mine. I call my witnesses Tanais, the black river with six urns, and Zeus, who causes the pull on the great chariots of night, Rhea through some bulls, and Nyx with some horses, old giants and new men, Pluto, who devours us, Uranus, who creates us, to this I adore a woman, and she is holy to me. The monster Poseidon with the blue hair hears me. May he grant my wish. I am the human soul singing, and I love. The huge shadow is full of clouds. The heavy rain spills in agitated sheets. Boreas rouses the woods. Zephyr rouses the grain. Likewise, our deep hearts are troubled by love. I love this woman, called Eurydice, always, everywhere, or the sky curse me, and the rising flower curse me, and the ripe corn. Do not trace magic words on the wall. Now I'd like to read a group of my poems, which are called Image Nations. Image Nation 1. The participation is broken, fished from a sky of fire, the fiery lake pouring itself to reach here. That matter of language caught in the act so that we meet in paradise. In such times, the eye consumes itself. White trees, rings around them, wander and roll. The fog breaks, the sky blue in the window. Plato sits way up there, his hands full of beautifuls, uglies, justs, unjusts, halves, doubles, pulls the strings, but his eyes watch a cat. The births begin on the bed, shaped as it is, he says, by a god. Four kittens. She comes to his feet when they are there. Picked up and held, she fills his hand with blood. The red pool flows over his silver ring, drips to the floor. The language sticks to his honey breath. She is the path of a tail, a door to the perishing moonshine, holes of intelligence supposed to be in the heart. Imagination 2. We are journeying in company with the messenger, but there it was there. You saw the head of a horse burn, its red eye flame. You stepped to the fireplace where the metamorphosed log lay without a body and put your hand over the seeing. Turned by that privacy from such public perils as words are, we travel in company with the messenger. The name of the bird who fell from the hands of O Moon is not, if following angles shape tears nourished by Sodom apples, we draw darkness, a kind of mud. In the moonlight, white blossoms hastening to fall are cut free. Then we, the apparatus, burned by a nightlight, are traveling in company with the messenger. Imagination 3. What if the body goes, the sense of the word which draws amor in a body, his arrows leafless, shining steel, his meaning in that meeting of hands, tastes, bitter filling fountain, if that poetry goes whose power drank from the body, gave amor a skin, an act, the worshipped height higher than what is left, another amor, inescapable pouring, holding that shape here together. Always. Born through all the elements, the night-singing sparrows are arrows. I define the dark correct that allows that I to appear the naked, unyielding form of I, acting a part, but it is not. The other is that, unlearned, this fear and charm of word, O shepherd, his way apart, flower and youth, with an arrow offshot. Imagination 4. A visit to the longs who run the pump house, stoke its fires, spread the ashes over a field to burn out. This is a surface of the moon, black and crusted. We ran out on it, calling, "You're it," jumped, rang with laughter. The crust broke. His bare feet slipped into the burning coals beneath. What's his name? The mystery that in the winter the snow did not remain in this place, a black garden. The surface of the moon, now explained. Ella cinders. It is a crust of cinders over the red coals, a banked fire over which no snow caught her hair. If you walk unwary, your feet slip into the fire of strawberries. Cleo, nearby, picks up agates and moonstones between the railway ties, works at his wheel to polish and open. Well, when the whole place was mud, a part of it froze in with the sunset, and these shadows were only curls in the mud. But the moonshine, that's a piece of the cheese, fell out of the moonstring. Imagination 5 with Ebba. A fool's paradise, if he is known by negation, the back of his shadow is the heart's desire. Once imaginary, your heart did not come there, the country's intentions disguised as a sexual pouring when you know the body burns in bubbles of fat. Your stylistic intentions defended by cruelty to another's mind, reference centering in patina and tossed pieces of old velvet culled from books. Father Ether, in the silent morning, looks out of the danger inside the writing of what has not taken place. You told me you had not dealt with the love of God, nearing in the mind's wars in the gift, a heart, and the thought tied, possible on one's own to flame. We talk about the dead end of lyrical realism. Your mirrors will rebel. We face another drying up in which gods are traditional patterns whose names decorate the place. They would not let you kill them if it were not a subtraction to fight back without knowledge of their grief. Nothing from not, where he is and where he is not. The 6 a.m. awakening of the city, nothing is more personal. Only his existence caught anew a fragrance. Perhaps it is your sake. My pencil dies without the assassins of imagination. Imagination 6, which is a marriage poem for Gladys Hindmarch and Cliff Anston. In this abide, pulling the next branch of the tree down to wring it, I have seen that vision over again. I had married a tree, placing a ring on each branch, to return again, another man, to pull down another branch. I would have you see this tree glistening and her adornment. An origin to which I return, there placing my sorrow for her adornment to solve it. A hilltop green, but it is two converging stairways, and love's dream ascends, tying the worlds, as if this shape of the earth were the first mountain. I lean over the steering wheel to ask this vision again, not to be mentally mine, but out there, to carry it a gift to a wedding, for it came 15 years ago from reading a book on the miracles of Mary in Egypt, never found again, recurs daily in marriage with the place and hour the two meet to see from their stairway. The powers are brought to birth, and again the vocabulary loses them, image, imageless. Plotinus says our effort is to make the visible invisible, but here the invisible would not be borrowed. May you have a radiant world, compelling adoration. The tree waits to be visible. And I want to read Jack Spicer's textbook of poetry, which is a sequence of 29 poems. Surrealism is the business of poets who cannot benefit by surrealism. It was the first appearance of the Logos that said the public be damned, but by which he did not mean that they did not matter or he wanted to be crucified by them, but that really he did not have a word to say to them. That was surrealism. But the business of ignoring the public is the business of the poet and not the surrealism of the poet. The surrealism of the poet could not write words. To be lost in a crowd of images, of metaphors, whatever they were, of words, this is a better surrender of the poet who is lost in the crowd of them, finally. To define a metaphor against the crowd of people that protest against them, this is neither of our businesses. It is as if nothing in the world existed except metaphors, linkings between things, or as if all our words without the things above them were meaningless. Personify, you say. It is less abstract to make a person out of a sound. But the word was the word not because he was a personified, but because he was a personification, as if he were human. To proclaim his humanity is to lie, to pretend that he was not a word, that he was not created to explain. The language where we are born across, temporarily, and witlessly in our prayers. 3. Poor bastards trying to get through hell in a hurry. Pray for them, bastards who are not patient enough to listen. The flying leaves of a moving tree, a bleeding tree, in a crowd of imaginary images. Pray for them, poor bastards who are too crowded to listen. An angle cutting off every surface to the prayer, the poem, the messages. An angle of the mind, meaning to do this. They go through life till the next morning, as we all do, but constantly, as if the shimmering before them were not hell, but the reach of something. Teach. 4. Taught, as a wire which reaches, a silver wire which reaches from the end of the beautiful as if elsewhere, a metaphor. Metaphors are not for humans. The wires dance in the wind of the noise our poems make, the noise without an audience, because the poems were written for ghosts. The ghosts of the poems were written for are the ghosts of the poems. We have it second hand. They cannot hear the noise they have been making. Yet it is not a simple process like a mirror or a radio. They try to give us circuits to see them, to hear them, teaching an audience. The wires in the rows are beautiful. 5. The motion of the afterlife of the poem, define ghosts as an India rubber eraser created to erase their own past. The motion of the afterlife, and you will think immediately of a photograph, the ghost of it defined as a blob of ectoplasm, an anti-image as if merely by being dead it could make the motions of what it was to be apparent, an argument between the dead and the living. 6. The poet thinks continually of strategies of how he can win out against the poem, seeking experience for specific instances, drawing upon the pulp of the brain and the legs and the arms and the motion of the poet, making him see things that can be conveyed through the words, or disbelief too, seeking experience for specific instances, and in the gradual lack of the beautiful, the lock of the door before him, a new Eurydice stepping up to him, punning her way through hell. They won't come through. Nothing comes through. The death of every poem in every line, the argument continues. 7. Nothingness is alive in the eyes of the beloved. He wears the clothes wherein he walks naked. He is fame. Sounded ahead by the trumpets of unreason, barely accounted for by the senses. He is what he is because he is never where he is. I cannot proclaim him, for he is not mine. Eros, amor, fili love, his body is more abstract than all the messages my body sends my brain of him. And he is human. I cannot proclaim starlight, for it is never in the same place. I can write a poem about him 100 times, but he is not there. The mere numbers prevent his appearance as the names Eros, Amor, Fili, Love, Starlight, for his fame is as the fame of what? I have not words for him. 8. Descends to the real by a rope ladder. The soul also goes there, solely, not love, beyond the thought of God. I mean the thought of thinking about God. Naturally, I mean the real God. Disregards all other images as you disregard the parts of words in a poem. The Logos, trying to be healed from his godhead, his dismay, disappears within the flat iron of existence. That smooths out all the words in the poem, imparts them, makes them real like the next day. And as the words heal, I did not mean the real God. 9. If you see him everywhere, or exactly nowhere, he becomes, as it were, the circumference of a circle that has no point but the boundary of your desire, coming to a point. And the human witness of this passion is rightly stunned by the incongruity of it, lifting a human being into a metaphor. All that we do in bed, or sleep, or sex, is limited by this circle, which can only be personally defined. On the outside of it is what everybody talks about. On the outside of it are the dead that try to talk. Once you try to embrace an absolute geometric circle, the naked loss stays with you like a picture echoing. 10. The Indian rope trick, and a little Indian boy climbs up it, and the Jungians and the Freudians and the social reformers all leave satisfied, knowing how the trick was played. There is nothing to stop the top of the rope, though. There is nothing to argue. People in the audience have seen the boy dancing, and it is not hypnosis. It is the definition of the rope that ought to interest everyone who wants to climb the rope dance, reading the poem. Reading the poem that does not appear when the magician starts or when the magician finishes, a climbing in between, real. 11. Boredom is part of the Logos too. You chose his word instead of someone else's because you are bored. Meaningless words stick in the throat and you cough them up as an abstraction of what you are trying to cough up. A green parrot that was talking away that was lost and no one could find it. An argument with the dead. That is what these pauses are mainly about. They argue with you that there have been no beauty, not even words. They speak out of the right side of their mouths. See them in the distance, not understanding their destiny, as we do not understand ours, making a metaphor inhuman as hell, standing under the shapes and forms that play with us like a camera selecting. I wonder if the man who's reading the newspaper would turn the pages a little more quietly, please. Thank you very much. 12. Being faithful, and you are only being faithful to the shadow of a word, once lost, once found. In the horny deeps below finding, once cast ashore upon me like the heart's cargo. And this is the system of metasexual metaphor, being faithful to the nonsense of it, the warp and woof, a system of dreaming fake dreams. Being faithful to it, all the ache of remembering the past, what the body doesn't know, the ache that isn't really there. Sorry for themselves, the words beckon terribly to me. They wave past out the door. Goodbye, I love you. Being faithful, I pray hope to it. Not them, not even the words. Built of solid glass, the temple out there in the weeds and California wildflowers, out of position, a place where we worship words, see through into like it is not possible with flesh only by beginning not to be a human being, only by beginning not to be a soul worshiper, and the flesh is important as it rubs itself into your soulness, or California, a division of where one is. Where one is in a temple that sometimes makes us forget that we are in it. Where we are is in a sentence. Where we are, this is idiocy. Where we are, a block of solid glass blocks us from all we have dreamed of. But this place is not where we are to meet it. It is not unfair to say that a city is a collection of humans, human beings. In their municipal trust, they sit together in cities. They talk together in cities, they form groups. Even when they do not form groups, they sit alone together in cities. Every city that is formed collects its slums and the ghosts of it. Every city that is formed collects its ghosts. Poetry comes long after the city is collected. It recognizes them as a metaphor, an unavoidable metaphor, almost the opposite. The city redefined becomes a church. A movement of poetry, not merely a system of belief, but their beliefs and their hearts living together. They are angry at their differences, the dead and the living, the ghosts and the angels, the green parrot and the dog I have just invented. All things that use separate words, they want to inhabit the city. But the city in that sense is as far from me and the things that speak through me as Dante was from Florence, farther. For it is a city that I do not remember. But the city that we create in our bar talk or in our fuss and fury about each other is in an utterly mixed and mirrored way an image of the city, a return from exile. It does not have to fit together like the pieces of a totally unfinished jigsaw puzzle my grandmother left in the bedroom when she died in the living room, the pieces of the poetry or of this love. Surrealism is a poem more than this, the intention that things do not fit together as if my grandmother had chewed on her jigsaw puzzle before she died, not as a gesture of contempt for the scattered nature of reality, not because the pieces would not fit in time, but because this would be the only way to cause an alliance between the dead and the living, to magic the whole thing toward what they called God, to mess around, to totally destroy the pieces, to build around them. A human love object is untrue, screw you. A divine love object is unfair, define the air it walks in. The old human argument goes on with the rhymes to show that it still goes on. a stiffening in time as puns are a stiffening in meaning. The old human argument that goes ahead with our clothes off or our clothes on, even when we are talking of ghosts. A human love object is untrue, screw you. A divine love object is unfair, define the air it walks in. Imagine this is lyric poetry. When the gas exploded, the ghost disappeared. There was merely a city of chittering human beings. What had seemed long glosses in the air, on the ground, were trivial. What had seemed to be words were merely reflected in the air as heat waves. There was a tremendous loss of substance when the gas exploded. Things that were there took wing, flew to the farthest corner of whatever sky had been above it, keening. This was supposed also to be the story of the creation of the universe. The pieces of the explosion coming afterwards together breathless, coagulating whatever truth they could muster. When the heart explodes, there is a tremendous loss. And when the gas explodes, the ghosts disappear. There is merely a city of chittering human beings. Astonish me, the words say that hide behind my alarm clock or my dresser or my pillow. Étonnez-moi, even the word says. It is up to us to astonish them and him, to draw forth answers deep from the caverns of objects or from the word himself, whatever that is. Whatever that is not a play on words, but a play between words, meaning come down to hang on a little cross for a while, in play. And the stony words that are left down with us greet him mutely, almost rudely, casting their own shadows. For example, the shadow the cross cast. No, now he is the low ghost when he is pinned down to words. He, at the only thing we dreamed of, golding words finer than all the metals you enclose things with, John Dee with his absolutely fake medium EK, who later wrote the Shepherd's Calendar, trying to transmute letters to metal all the way through Bohemia, later in the 19th century becoming a theosophist and dying. They tell of a love that is beyond that, a chemical formula, sulfur combined with darkness and a piece of the moon, then say, I love you three times and turn around. Magic, which is trying to hold on to people with your own hands, is funny while surrealism is not funny. There is a place where we can talk and we cannot talk, both of us, heat. Hold to the future with firm hands, the future of each afterlife, of each ghost, of each word that is about to be mentioned. Don't say, put beauty in here for the past on account of the past. On account of the past, nothing has happened. Stick to the new, with glue, paste it there continually, what God and man has created. Your fingers catch at the edge of what you are pasting. You have left the boys' club where the past matters. The future of your words matters. That future is continually in the past. That pathology leads to new paths and pathfinding, all the way down past the future. The words go swimming past you as if you were blue fish. Don't you have a sense of humor? Can't you take this calmly? All the words they use for poetry are meaningless. Postage stamps at the best. Surrealism, a blue surcharge of Chad. This is an imaginary African kingdom which will never gain independence because it does not exist, and is not merely an act of the imagination, and did issue postage stamps. This is the poet and the poem talking to you. To create the beautiful again, it is as if somehow the lovers of postage stamps had created an image of themselves, a red wheelbarrow or a blue image of the unknown, and each stamp we put on the letters they send us must be canceled, heartlessly, as if its delivery, the beautiful image of it, were a metaphor. Wanting to explain, it is wanting to explain, and all through it burrows of rabbits hover like mice in chimneys or metaphors in the middle of a gingerbread cake. The poet wants to take up all the marbles and put them in his pocket, wants marbles, where the poem is like winning the game. It is so absurd that the rats calling credo quia absurdum, or the cats or the mountain lions become a singular procession of metaphors, each with their singular liturgy. These are words, and their words holler hollowly in the rabbit burrows, in the metaphors, in the years of our life. St. Elmo's Fire, or Why This Will Be a Textbook Concerning Poetry for 20,999 Years, Almost a Lifetime. I chicken out at the edges of it, and what doesn't come through to me at the edges of it isn't as if angels met singing or any of that business. We are all alone, and we do not need poetry to tell us how alone we are. Time's winged chariot is as near as the next landmark or bus station. We need a lamp, a lump, spoken or unspoken, that is even above love. St. Elmo's fire was what was above the ships as they sailed the unspoken seas. It was a fire that was neither a glow or a direction, but the business of it was fire. Like love being made between fire engines, the poets talk to each other. To put out the fire, not in each other, but the fire the poems made. To feel sorry for the bastards, us, who walk through hell's fire without moving, quickly listening to seashells while in our ears there is its real roar. Quickly, and then the sea moves toward us conveniently, as if death were an excuse for all of our sorrows. The birds fly away, the surf breaks on the shore, on the rocks, on whatever the ocean, being ocean, is conscious of, deliberately. And the tides pull back against the very bones we have left them. And yet they too bake hearts, immortal mockers of man's enterprise. Unbelieving, the photograph shows nothing of their faces, the two of them, not even as if they were a strange language. From the top to bottom there is a universe, extended past what the words mean and below, God damn it, and what the words are, a vessel, a vesicle of truth. And yet they too break hearts, these humans, uncoded, unciphered, their sheer presences beyond the word beauty. They are the makers of man's enterprise, beyond the word blowtorch, the two of them holding a blowtorch at all beauty. What I am, I want, asks everything of everyone, is by degrees a ghost. Steps down to the first metaphor they invented in the underworld, pure and clear like a river, the insight, as a place to step further. It was the first metaphor they invented when they were too tired to invent a universe, the steps, the way down, the source of a river. The dead are not like the past, do not like the past, hold to their fingers by their thumbs, a gesture at once forgiving and forgotten. The eyes in the weeds, I am, I was, I will be, I am not. The eyes the ghosts have seen, our eyes, a trial of strength between what they believe and we. We do not hate the human beings that listen to it, read it, make comments on it. They are like you. It is as if they or you observed one continual moment of surf breaking against the rocks. A textbook of poetry is created to explain. We do not hate the human beings that listen to it, the moment of the surf breaking. It is fake. The real poetry is beyond us, beyond them breaking like glue. And the rocks were not there, and the real birds, they seemed like seagulls, were nesting on the real rocks. Close to the edge, the ocean, the habit of seeing Christ, the Logos, unbelieved in where the real edge of it is, a private language carried about us, them, ununderstanding. That they have lost the significance of a name is unimportant. In hoax, signo, winket, or the passive troubling probability troubling the restless sea, which the restless poets support with their metaphors about it being as how it isn't there. Now the things that are for Jim are coming to an end. I see nothing beyond it, like a false nose where a real nose is lacking. Faceless people, the real sound of the dead, a blowing of trumpets proclaiming that they have been there and been alive, the silver voices of them, to be alive, like the noises alive people wear, like the word Jim especially more than the words. Now I'd like to finish with two of my own poems. One is a translation from Mallarmé called Anguish. Anguish, I do not come tonight to conquer your body, O beast in whom the vices of a whole people flow, nor to uncover a dark storm in your unclean hair with the incurable boredom that my kiss sheds. In your bed, I ask for the deep sleep without dreams hovering behind the curtains, unknown to remorse, which you can taste after your black lies, you who know more of nothingness than the dead. Because the vice, eating my own nobleness, marked me like you with sterility. And so long as no crime's tooth wounds the heart at home in your stony breast, I run away, pale and drawn, haunted by my last white sheet, afraid to die when I sleep alone. And the last poem, Out of the Window. Out of the window, the sea is a fire. Out of the window, the desire is the angelic presence, but then I may desire. The fire turns, out of the window, half earth, half sea are burning. And in the loss of heart, an entrance, a roadmaster, all the buildings are down. Orchard is gone, removed by the company, swept by sand, driven into the desert, the birth dries. I have lost my heart, and to say this, unwounded, I am talking about invisibility. I would have you eat of it, the betrayers, and this president, this old man whose definitions are down, out of his time, government proved at last to be the enemy because there is no presence in his thought. I would have the betrayers eat of it, because of fire, the heart has that permission to desire, because out of the rock and brush of the first place, toward the land of this sight, sound, and intellect, the consumed heart has the courage to be lost, half earth, half sea, burning. Thank you very much. Because is it early?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, really? You mean I'm not giving your money's worth? Gee. I'd like to read the poem Sophia Nichols, which was referred to in the introduction of Marx, and then the time ought to be. I've got to find that poem. No, I've got it. Sophia Nichols. Sophia Nichols, the wind hits and returns. It is easy to personify a new place and language, but the new body stings. These men with green eyelids drawing their worth, it was rumored from Egypt, knew. The work is part of it, a power arrived at, the same thirst. He borrowed a head for a day, but which head? The phrases tremble in the other mouth, it is true and false. The veil of her face, an old porcelain, not for the hand to comfort. She moved beyond the sop one gave for affection. My success has been to keep duty and love alive, she said. Her hand waved with the power of disease. Sophia Nichols of the orchards, the deserts, the flooded ponds and games wherein the moon sought out our feet, died with a mouthful of tumor. It is true and false. The moon flowers, that is Blake talking. Tonight it is the half blossom, and the stars too above this mud are from the other mouth. This city untouched. The streets, hotel lyric, have a foreignness, a place outside a window, a sound of bees pulling the lilac. Above cement, this wonder, the other mouth, that crickets were men once who so loved the muses they forgot to eat. Now fed on thistles, the language must sting, the flesh turned to a dew, the other mouth, the loss, some glistening blood on the leaves of the mirror plant. Sophia Nichols of the story, the golden rod of the snake that entered the cage and ate the captured sparrows, the telegraph keys, pale yellow paper, of the odyssey and the homing stories of the soul, the sea imaginary, light and foaming green on the rocks, dark further out as the eyes of a cat. If she would be free from words, she would free me. Even in the night, there are birds summoned by words.